This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to another Attacking Scrum Rugby World Cup special. I'm joined this evening by Yestin George. How are you, Yest?
All right, thanks. Slightly less exuberant than this time last week, but, you know, it still feels good. Life is, it's still a nice feeling, isn't it? Just to have that in the back pocket.
It's the beauty of the rest week, isn't it? Is you get to bask in that sunshine for an extra week without anything going wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you could have done with... How do you feel? Did you feel that you could have done with the Georgia game this weekend just to keep it going?
I don't know, actually. When we looked at the fixtures when they first came out, I was like, actually, this is perfect because you've got a real tough one to start with. Then you've got Portugal. Then you've got the, you know, what we assumed would be, you know, a crunch game against Australia, which it turned out to be. Then you've got your week's recovery. Then you've got Georgia just to kind of sharpen things up again. So yeah, it definitely looked like a good layout from a playing perspective. But it's always been this way, isn't it? It's like when the Six Nations goes on and you've got that rest weekend in there, or we were saying off air, like when the Tour de France, you know, in between the Alps and the Pyrenees, and you've got a rest day, you think, oh, what? We were saying we're a bit like kind of the ITV coverage going, right, what are we going to do? Although they put together wonderful packages, which...
Get in the helicopter visit a site of historic importance, usually often rather grimly war-related.
That's true, actually, yeah.
So there you go.
Unfortunately, yeah, we won't be doing that. We might drop in a few more 90s music references, which seem to go down very well with the listeners. It goes down well with a few listeners, which I assume is everyone. There must be loads of people going, what the hell are you talking about? But nonetheless, there may be a few.
The Sultans of Ping FC were played on Radio 6, as it was pointed out by one of our listeners that very week, suggests that we might actually be at the cutting edge of things rather than just distantly and dimly remembering my early 20s. You'd have been far younger than that, Jed.
I really enjoyed it, though, the fact that did come on. And I think I was changing a nappy at the time, and my one-year-old thought it was hilarious. And then my eldest walked in and went, what's this song? And a couple of times has said, a couple of times over the weekend has gone, because she's got like about 10 songs in her head that she wants to hear over and over again. And a couple of times has gone, can we play Where's My Jumper? Can you play Where's My Jumper? So we have had it a few times this weekend. So, who knows?
Spotify, that 0.001. 1/8 of a penny that they're getting for every play they'd have made about 0.7p
exactly
off the back of the Attacking Scrum. That's great.
That's it. So yeah, let's hope we can do that for a few more. But what we did think we'd do is we'll have a look back at, do a bit of a half-term report, if you like, look back at some of our favourite moments. Now, this isn't going to be, as you may have guessed, is not going to be planned out with the level of detail and scrutiny and having watched every minute of every single game. This is pieced together from two curmudgeonly rugby fans who've been watching as much as we can. Again, if you want that analytical stuff, you know to go to Squidge and not to us. Which we're hoping, while we're out in Nantes, to do a collaboration with Squidge, which would be really, really good fun. So, so yeah, fingers crossed we can make the logistics work on that one. And
so I'm very much looking forward to his analysis of the Australia game. That's going to be something to see, isn't it?
I know. I just admire the effort to go into to watching all these games in that level of detail. At the other end of the spectrum, I have to add, my mate Emlyn texted me shortly before we came on air, and it simply said, "The Portuguese hooker is called Tadja. Brilliant." We'll be down that end of the spectrum versus Squidge. But yeah, looking forward to getting out to Nantes next week. Myself and Dan are going to be heading out there and bringing you lots of extra, for want of a better word, content. So make sure you are subscribed. And a big thanks to our sponsors for making that happen at MSG Tours. There are still some packages available. I think there's still some ticket and accommodation packages available for around about $299. So if you want to get on and take a look at those, search for MSG Tours, or you can have a look on our Twitter page and look at the packages that are pinned on our tweet there as well. So, right, where do you want to get stuck into then? Yes, what do you want to start with? Do you want to start with some of the magic moments, or do you want to have a look back at this weekend, first of all, this odd weekend where Wales weren't playing?
I think, I caught some of the stuff. Let's start with the concept of New Zealand and now being, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you watch, obviously, media coverage with half an eye towards how they have a job to do, which is really hyping the whole operation. And when, and with Scotland being the only team in action on, it was just interesting seeing how they would sell the weekend, as it were. And the reaction to the New Zealand win, I thought, was interesting, just from the point of view that, you know, the people saying, "Oh, they're back, and it's now a four horse race again," etc., etc. And I wondered. I mean, it's speaking to my close Kiwi friend who was very disgruntled before the tournament and doesn't appear to be any less gruntled now. Or is he more gruntled?
More gruntled?
I can't remember. He's probably more gruntled. But he certainly was. His final line was... disappointing end, full stop.
Amazing.
And I said, you have to remember that was the team that, the same team that beat us at home.
Yeah. On Dan Biggar's 100th cap and Alan Wynne-Jones' 150th.
Yeah. And he said, yeah, but that team turned up on that night. And I was like, okay, fair enough. But I still think there's, there's still plenty. There's plenty of potential interest, isn't there? Something extraordinary is bound to happen, and invariably it has. You wouldn't bet against the fact that New Zealand were the deliverers of that match where everything's turned on its head. My friend was relishing the prospect of them playing France, for instance, and he thought they'd turn them over. And I just thought, well, okay.
Yeah, it's fascinating, actually, New Zealand, because I've never known a World Cup where they've not gone in favourites. I can't think in my lifetime that they've not. I don't really remember 91. I imagine they were probably favourites for it, and Australia did them in the semis. 95, they certainly were. 99, they were. What came next? Like three, they were. Right the way through to the last tournaments, which they, you know, which they won. And then, yeah, 19, they were probably favourites for that as well. So it is really weird seeing the rest of the world catch up with New Zealand. And I think it's still more the rest of the world have caught up than they've nosedived. You know, when you leave a generation behind, it's a shame Murph isn't around because he is very much in that kind of, I just don't think this New Zealand team's all that. And I think a lot of his thinking for that is that, you know, there was a spine of absolute all-time greats knocking around all of those previous sides, you know, whether it's McCaw or Carter or Nonu or, you know, further back, Lomu and whoever. And I think this time round, it is easy to look at that side and say, okay, there aren't necessarily all-time greats in there. But I think Aaron Smith is one. And I think, again, if he, you know, he is one of those players who can just completely boss a really, really big game. And that could be a quarterfinal against Ireland, for example. And there is still enough outrageous raw talent knocking around the rest of that size that it was never in my head to write off New Zealand. So really, nothing's changed for me between them losing to France and walloping Italy. I don't suddenly think, oh, right. Oh, I thought they were done after the French defeat. But now, a win against admittedly an off-colour Italy, I don't think there's a huge amount to read into it.
They'd be really disappointed, wouldn't they, Italy? They'd be gutted.
Yeah. It's a real shame because it feels like a bit of a lame duck presidency now that Crowley's heading off, having had, you know, having turned them into a competitive side, really good to watch. And I kind of get the logic behind it, but I think it would have been good to see some continuity and see him kind of carry on. And maybe that's the reason why is, you know, they thought that they weren't progressing at the right level, but I think they generally have been good under him. And it does feel like one of those end of term things, which can go one of two ways. And sadly, yeah, it's gone the wrong way, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that's there's got to be, much as there are going to be teams that underperform Australia, Italy. There's bound to be some surprises along the way from now on, because there haven't really been. Well, you'd say Fiji beating Australia is a surprise, but under the circumstances, we could kind of see it coming, couldn't we? I think there's something going to be, we're not going to be able to see it coming. Probably the biggest shock is us beating Australia by that many points. Although people, everybody said, oh, it was going to happen. It was bound to happen. And I hated the fact that every English pundit was going, oh yeah, it's going to be, oh yes, formality. And I was like, wow, really? But anyway, that's more to do with my lack of confidence, really.
Weirdly, I didn't say it on here, and it's easy to say with retrospect. I think I predicted like a 4-point win or something like that. And then as the week went on, I just thought, oh, this side is... I definitely didn't envisage anything like that. But I thought when we went into that game that it would have been hugely disappointing to not win it. You know, that was a side there on the racks, there for the taking. And so as poor as Australia were, you still can't forget how ruthless Wales were. We're ruthless and still left a little bit out there, if that helps.
Well, even against Georgia, Australia, they managed to motor and score some tries, but then looked quite vulnerable at times. And not Georgia, sorry. Yeah, no, hang on. What am I talking
Portugal
about?
Today,
against Portugal, yeah. No, they were...
Tadja.
Of course. And Portugal butchered several chances, butchered them. So yeah, that could have been a different story as well, obviously having taken the lead as well, but definitely. Yeah, so I don't know. New Zealand,
I'm thinking
New Zealand are going to do something, and I thought Scotland, I'd have to say, you know, you watch, obviously they played well and Chris Harris was class on Saturday night, and Darcy Graham, you know, gets all the headlines and the man of the match, and quite rightly so. And the closest thing to Shane Williams in human form that I've seen for quite a while. But I just can't see them being able to withstand the power of the Irish, really.
The other thing is that it has to be a win by more than seven, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So they have to, and that's the thing, is it's hard enough to beat Ireland, and there is a safety blanket in there, which I just think is going to stretch things that bit further. And it's a shame for Scotland. Again, part of me wonders, I don't know, it's like the constant misfiring at World Cups has been a blow for Scotland. Last, you know, I think like we said with Murph last week, there's been times where, you know, in the early noughties, Scotland were a really poor outfit, and it didn't really matter what group they were in. They weren't likely to make much of a dent in the World Cup. This time and last time, there was definitely a degree of expectation. Now, last time they fluffed their lines, because as great as Japan were, and it was their own World Cup, Scotland should have got out of a group with Japan and Ireland in it, and they didn't. And, you know, admittedly, the wheels came off for Ireland as well. They've kind of regrouped in a very weird 4 years that followed, and then subsequently have drawn, you know, a very, very tough pool stage. The thing that I think will really smart with Scotland fans is they didn't fire a shot in that first game against South Africa. And that's the bit that I think is really disappointing. If they'd taken South Africa to the wire, I think it would have given them so much confidence into this game to go, look, we can go toe-to-toe with the best. There's no reason why we can't get a good result against Ireland. But the fact that they didn't, and again, to bring it back to Darcy Graham, who is a wonderful talent, again, it just felt like that was the moment in that first game where he had that opportunity with the overlap. I think it was Van der Merwe outside him and chose to go on his own, and it didn't come off.
I wonder whether he'll even play against Ireland.
It's a really good point. I tell you, to go back to the media, one of the reporters who I think is one of the best, actually, on the BBC is Tom English, the brilliantly named Tom English, who's called Tom English, is Irish, but covers Scotland, which is absolutely superb. I think he's excellent. He's really, really objective. Called Eddie Jones the week before and said Eddie was shouting at clouds, and I think he is. You know, I prefer my analogy of training in his pajamas covered in marmalade, but essentially shouting at clouds. And then, he said in relation to Darcy Graham, he said, look, we all know he's a wonderful talent. Of course, he's going to run in tries against Romania. Be interesting to see if he gets the opportunity next week and whether he takes it. And I hope he does, because rugby is better for having characters like Darcy Graham around. He's just a joy to watch. Would you pick him? Yes, if you're in Townsend's shoes,
I would, because it just has to be gamble.
I think you're right.
They're gonna have to roll the dice. And as everybody says, when Finn Russell rolls the dice, it's either an amazing piece of play or an intercept.
Yeah, that's it.
And I think it's a big burden on one person to deliver all the goods. So I would be. I mean, there was again, Tom English was talking about Hamish Watson being a possibility because he looks so rumbustious. But again, you're talking about playing, and Rory Darge has done nothing wrong, has he? So
yeah, I don't know. It's always hard to read much into those wallopings, isn't it? Because, you know, it's very different, because Wales always alternate their sides and labour through those games. But other nations seem to have players running in four or five tries, or, you know, scooping three turnovers or whatever. I think Darge has been the in-form seven the whole year. Dempsey has been excellent at eight, and we know what Richie does at six as well. So it's tricky to see that. But again, Watson's he's a lion. He's a class operator, but it's very tricky. I am so looking forward to that game, though, because if this has been kind of something of a dud weekend, next weekend is fully loaded again, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a bit like sort of live blogging a game. The listeners will be listening to this on a Monday at the very earliest, and I'm watching the Tongans go up three. Tongans. Here's another media thing.
Go on.
Chris Jones says Tonga all the time, and it drives me mad because.
Well, Murph is now an elected member of the Pacific Islands Rugby Board.
He is, isn't he? Yeah.
Bear in mind, he's not got anyone's name right for 7 years.
when he turns up and he's on the pod and he's wearing those garlands, I was wondering what that was all about.
Cultural representation, or what's the term?
Appropriation.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I just thought, oh yeah, he's changed.
I know,
but yeah, that just I can't quite believe, because I think every pundit and commentator has in the last 10 years just said Tonga, and Chris Jones is not. You know, he's not tone deaf by any means.
No, I mean, and he's certainly not swoops into the commentary box underprepared, is he?
You know, no, grief,
he's not
no.
one of those. He's not one of those fellas. He covers a lot of rugby.
Yeah,
it's interesting though with that, because again, I find this. I don't know whether this sounds like I'm some kind of lunatic, but you know, I don't know. Hearing Miles Harrison say Chile just sounds odd to me.
Yeah.
And likewise, I think it would be odd. Like when you say Jack Morgan, that sounds
it sounds
fucking weird if I say it. And so yeah. I kind of like it's weird to know where to draw the line. But you're right, Tongan is Tongan, isn't it?
I often think that when I'm saying the name Jack Morgan, but it's very difficult. This is random. There's a laundry service called Avon Wen. That I see around big lorries, right, southeast of England, and I wonder what people, how other people say that word, because they big branding on the lorries, and I saw one today in Brighton, and I just thought, I wonder what other people, how would they say Avon Wen, because it's White River basically, yeah. In Welsh, and I don't even think it's a Welsh company as it happens, but anyway.
I know.
Talk about already going off on a tangent.
I know. I was going to say, like, what else have we got? I was to finish this first part of the show on a similar tangent. There's a road I walk past here in Surrey, just outside Guildford. And I don't even know how you pronounce it, but it looks like Llanaway, but with a double L at the front. And I was like, surely it couldn't be Llanaway in here. Like, I was like, that's not a place name in Wales, is it?
No. Llanelwy, but not Llanaway. No, not to the best of my knowledge, anyway.
Anyway, yeah. So again, these things do baffle me. But yeah, the pronunciation stuff is really interesting, especially when Murph is the one banging the drum for the Pacific Islanders, because, the one that really gets me, by the way, the mispronunciation that drives me mad. And you hear it loads. Martin Williams and Shane Williams have done this for about 7 years. Is either Tag Burn or Tag Furlong. And I was like, yeah. I've heard it a million times. It's Tig, because I've heard other people say it correctly. You hear Irishmen say it's Tig. It's like Tiger, but without the R, right? I think I'm right in saying.
It's not hard.
It's definitely not Tag. And yes, you know, it would be an unusual name for most Anglo-speaking countries, but it's... But once you know, when those players have been playing for 10 years at the top of their game, you know that it's Tig. You know, you've heard that. Again, my pronunciation might be wrong, but it's certainly not Tag.
Well, there's another faintly relevant rugby one, which is I met somebody in Brighton on Friday, and I was introduced to her as Ellery.
Ellery, like celery.
Ellery, yeah, as in Ellery Handley. And I just thought that I actually said, "Are you called Ellery?" And she went, "No, Ellery." Yes, and I went, "All right, yeah, okay, from Llandybyr, yeah, fair enough."
Yeah, I do like the Ellery Henry reference though, which again, I'm sure will lead us into more tangents as we head into the second part of the show. But as we do that, we are going to be looking ahead to Wales versus Georgia at some point, and we're also going to be looking back at some of our favourite moments of the Rugby World Cup so far. So stick with us for that and ramblings down various avenues, Llanaway or otherwise.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to the second part of the Attacking Scrum podcast with MSG Tours. As we've said a number of times, really excited to be heading out to Nantes next week for the Wales versus Georgia game. And it's not too late. If you're listening to this on Monday morning and you're still thinking about heading over to see Wales during the Rugby World Cup, then check out some of the packages available at MSG Tours. And yeah, we'd love to see you over there. If anyone is going, give us a shout. We'd love to have a chat with you. And we've also got, I think we're also going to be doing a live show the morning of the game as well, which is quite daunting. But all of that to look forward to. Right, Justin, do you want to take a look at some of your favourite moments of the World Cup so far?
Yeah, go on then. You start, because I'm like, I can't even remember what happened the day before yesterday at the moment.
Well, I'll tell you what did happen yesterday, before we get into it, was Fiji labouring to a win past Georgia. Did you catch this one?
Yeah, they looked really...
God, it was like the pressure had got to them, wasn't it?
Yeah, they looked distinctly edgy. As they kept on saying in comms, it was just one-up runners, and no guile and no, and also trying the miracle pass. It suddenly looked like they'd gone back two tiers in a fortnight.
But I've never seen Fiji lose a game through handling errors and lack of ball skills in the backs. I've seen them lose games through ill discipline, poor game management, bad goal kicking, all of the other stuff that goes with it, poor set piece, and their line out was utterly shocking. But I've never seen them, you know, admittedly, all right, they didn't lose the game, but I've never seen them look so un-Fijian in the backs. It was a real shame.
I hate to say this, but there was an inference I felt I can't remember which co-commentator said it, that they'd had 2 weeks off, with a kind of almost a nudge, really, as if they'd chill, you know, they've been chilling out a bit too much, and having achieved a significant amount already, that there was that they could have done with a Gatland style head coach who was going to not let them forget the job in hand, and it just didn't look like that at all. And some of their best players, they just didn't look. I thought that when they put the bench on, they just put, there was some spark there from that point onwards. But it was really odd. I hope it's not they're running on empty. And I hope they've still got something to contribute, because as we've said previously, when, you know, they would be the potential surprise package would be just great for the game.
Oh, it'd be incredible for the game.
Interestingly
about that kind of, yeah, that inference about relaxing a bit too much, because you did hear stories, you know, you hear from Ben Ryan and his time in charge of the seventh side, how a lot of what he had to do was kind of instill some basic, some basic discipline into some of the players. I don't mean playing discipline, but some of the off the field stuff, you know, that you can't just eat what you want and everything like that. And I certainly hear that Simon Raluni is a much more open coach. You know, he's certainly not a Gatland style coach, but again, I think that's what's got the best out of them so far, is an ability to express themselves alongside what they've worked hard at and the set piece and stuff. So I hope it's just one of those, you know, a bit like us against Portugal. I really hope it's the dud game that they have where they'll look back at that and go, yeah, we really weren't great, and they've got something more to give when it comes to the quarterfinal. And because I honestly I thought going into last week, if they play England in the quarterfinal, I thought, have prior to watching that game, I thought there's every chance that Fiji will get a result out of that. I still think they're an X factor team when they've got their best players on the pitch. And has there been any further news about Joshua Tuasova and the, because he went off with a yellow card and I couldn't see anything after the game about whether it was upgraded to a red, but it didn't look great.
It didn't look great, but then there's been a lot of, I don't know is the short answer. Again, massively under research. Well done, yes. But pleasure. Also, there was some stuff going on in the Australia game where Australia were lucky not to get a red as well. So yeah, there does seem to have been some. Somebody explained it's they explain very well when it's upgraded, but they don't really explain very well when it's downgraded or when it's not.
And to me, it was a straight red actually, but we don't have them anymore, do we? So no. So we don't know. But I mean, it would be from a rugby point of view, and I mean that, you know, look, if he gets served a ban off the back of that, then it's absolutely right. But from a rugby point of view, in terms of which is not the most important thing, it would be great to see him on the pitch against England to make that as big a contest. I'm presuming it's going to be England, and I'm presuming that they will get the job done next week against Portugal.
And there's
all other permutations as well in there. So they are essentially there for that second, for that spot against England again. We could still bungle it and end up second, couldn't we?
If we lose,
convincingly,
if we don't get, we need a point
to top the group.
We need a losing bonus point to top the group.
Okay. So we should be all right. What did you make of Georgia? I thought that I was pretty underwhelmed by them prior to this game. I thought they'd been distinctly average and they played some really good stuff, actually. You know, it wasn't about scrummaging. As the cliches go, they looked great in the backs.
Yeah, and I did. The one thing I thought was their kicking from the deck was good, and they were nailing penalties from their own half. And I think building a 12, you know, if you can build a 9-point lead and put the pressure on, then, you know, that's I think they know what they're good at, but they're not just that anymore.
Oh, they are far from that, actually. And again, actually, if you were to look at that game and again, strictly in terms of rugby cliches, you would say, oh, right, well, yeah, Fiji will play all the attacking rugby and Georgia will be great at the scrum. Georgia had a horrid time at scrum time and Fiji couldn't play their traditional way in the backs, whereas Georgia looked really, really fluid in the backs. And you're right, you know, the goal kicking is, you know, as we head into the business end, it's so crucial. And that is definitely an Achilles heel that Fiji have. And where it looked so kind of flawless against Australia, It certainly didn't against Georgia. Whereas, yeah, Niniashvili was nailing those long kicks and keeping them in the game. So, from a neutral perspective, if we weren't playing them next week, I'd be, you know, it's welcome to see Georgia playing that well and again proving competitive. It has been a good World Cup from that point of view. We've mentioned it a couple of times, but are you in agreement? Yes, that there's been a lot less of the drubbings.
I've got a sort of crush on the Uruguay as well. The way that they played.
That's good, actually. That brings me back. I forgot we were supposed to be talking about some of our favourite moments, but let's go straight to the best find, the kind of the most, you know, a player that you didn't know about before the tournament that you've really enjoyed watching this time around.
Oh, my God.
I've got one for you because when
go
you
on then,
Uruguay,
you start. Honestly, yeah.
So Abdao, the Uruguayan open side flanker, I have found absolutely incredible. I just looked at it, you know, I watched it. Which game would it have been? Who did they play after France? Can't remember. No, gone. In fact, it was a game they weren't even particularly good in. France, New Zealand. It must have been an Italy game, yeah. So they weren't even particularly fluid against Italy. But Adao won a stack of turnovers. Again, Squidge will be able to tell you how many that he won, but it was loads. Honestly, anytime anyone was on the floor, Ardair was over it. And I just thought he was so impressive. Every occasion I've seen him, he's just looked completely superb. And one of those players, I think he's heading to play MLS rugby, you know, I don't know, Miami or somewhere like that. I just think, God, if we'd have had a scouting network looking at these guys, you know, he could be heading to I don't know, to Cardiff or Scarlets or wherever, and really making a difference. But I've really enjoyed watching him.
Yeah, I like the Portuguese 15. I can't remember his name.
Sousa Guedes.
Yeah. And there are loads of players that you just think.
I adore the fact that the Portuguese captain is called Thomas Appleton, by the way. That's fantastic. So cool. There's lots to love in that Portuguese side.
And to be fair to the Romanians, I know they got absolutely drubbed, but they were. There's players. There are definitely players when they always say that, again, in commentary, they tend to say, and playing second division or third division.
Yeah, or fourth division French rugby, as some of the Portuguese are. Yeah.
I mean, that's low, because I've watched second division French rugby and it's not amazing by any means. You do think that there are players. I don't know. I mean, you just think there are players. Certainly, I think if I can sweep right, make massive generalizations, that there are very few players who don't look like they can handle the ball, or they look frightened to make a tackle, or they look completely out of their depth. It just doesn't look like that anymore. And again, obviously, they've had. Was Vern Cotter, I think, helping the Romanians?
Oh, is he? He's been up to post Fiji, yeah.
I just think that was a. I think the IRB might have just.
Yeah, it often happens, doesn't it? That's why you often see Welsh coaches cropping, you know, Phil Davis cropping up in Namibia and Kingsley in Canada and all these kind of things that that you often see. I think it is one of those. One of those things actually that rugby is good at, for all the faults of world rugby, those kind of coaching, bringing coaching experience to different developing nations is something that can.
There's me using IRB still as if it's.
No, it's good. I like that. But it would
still
be good,
living in the past.
It would be good to go back to all those old governing bodies as well. What was the what was the cricket one before it was the ECB? It's the TCCB or something,
Testing County Cricket Board. Yeah, that's
bring
right.
Bring that back.
Yeah. Bring back the Fairs Cup.
The Fairs Cup,
I didn't realise this until I listened to another podcast, that you had to literally have a fair in your city in order
to
compete in the Fairs Cup, which is why I think Leeds won it a couple of times. And I had no idea that was a prerequisite of the competition. That's mad, isn't it?
It's mad, but also brilliant.
And I don't mean a fair as in, you know, some like roustabouts with some dodgers, you know, like a proper fair.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great, actually. I'd happily get on board with that. It seems a lot better than you need to be a Gulf state in order to host anything. Definitely the way that sport is heading. Let's bring it back to a positive, Justin. We're all about positivity, aren't we?
Yeah. I think, as you can probably tell, I'm so guilty of non-prep here that I think it's time we should beg our listeners, who are probably far more I know they are. They're far more knowledgeable than I am, to contribute to this post pod, so we can actually not to do our homework, because we'd already
that's too late. Yeah,
we've already butchered the whole pod, but they can at least put us right on a few things.
Yeah,
I think with new talent and new players, it'd be really interesting to see what other people think.
I do still think that it exists. Yeah, definitely. Everyone who's wants to tell us, you know, the players they've enjoyed watching the most, you know, particularly those kind of players you've been watching for the first time, tweet us in at Attacking Scrum. Would love to get your opinion on that. In fact, it would have been brilliant to get it 4 hours ago because I could have passed it all off as my own knowledge, which clearly I haven't. But yeah, it's really interesting to see these talents emerge from these countries because you kind of don't get that in football anymore. You know, do you remember you used to have it, you know, like Karol Poborski at Euro 96 or something like that? Well, everyone knows all these players in the world now because how widely televised soccer is around the world. Whereas in rugby, you still do have that degree of hidden talent tucked away. You know, there'd probably be a lot of the Welsh squad that people who watch, you know, all the internationals and then the European Cup probably wouldn't know that much about. You know, I think there'll be a lot of players that would have taken English fans by surprise in the Welsh side, you know, and
what we were saying last week about the sense that everybody always focus on Finn Russell, you know, the Anglo-centric broadcasters, you know, they'll always focus on, they wouldn't know whether Gareth Thomas has had a good season. Mm. No chance. They wouldn't know because, you know, I don't know whether Joe Marler has had one really, to be honest. But we are quite parochial. I mean, I certainly am anyway. And it was always astounds me with things like when there was transfer speculation about Cody Gakpo, for instance. You know, I this was pre World Cup, mm. and everybody had an opinion on Twitter about him, and I just didn't have a clue. You know, did not have a clue.
Yeah, but also everyone on Twitter had an opinion based on a highlights reel of 6 minutes on YouTube. I'm not like, who in the world has time to watch all of this stuff? You know, it just can't, like, you can't know every right back in La Liga. You just can't. No one watches that much La Liga. It doesn't exist. You know, it'd be the same as someone turning around to us again, right? You know, what's that second choice Sharks open side? What's he like? I was like, I haven't got a clue because I watch these sides run over the Dragons and then I largely forget about them because that's what this league does to you.
It's only when Tane Plumtree moves over here that we suddenly know that he even existed.
Yeah, I know. I know that's. And to be honest, I thought he was going to be in the squad, but he wasn't. Let's do one more. Let's do one more category before we head to a break. And this should be quite an easy one. Let's go for best game. Let's see if there's anything other than the obvious. Yes, and what's the game you've enjoyed the most so far?
Well, I did. I wish I could have a hipster answer. I wish I could just be, but I'm not. I'm going to go for the bloody obvious. Definitely the Ireland South Africa game, and in the hope that isn't the best game as well. You know, I hope there are. There may not be. I think there's potential for games of that intensity. The one thing I think we're assured of is that there will be games of equal intensity later on in the tournament. Because it didn't deliver a France, New Zealand style kind of, not this time round, but it didn't deliver a sort of festival of running rugby or anything. But it was as compelling a game as you could see. And I like people poncing around doing mercurial things in the backs mostly. But that was... don't know, there was something that you couldn't, you I think you said on Merced, you know, you even if you wanted to blink, you felt you had to pause the screen. It was just so compelling.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, some of the other well, better researched and better funded podcasts than this have been talking about this week, the fact that it wasn't it wasn't a tri-fest. It was nothing to do with that. It was the intensity, I think, is the word you used, and that's definitely it. It was just so incredible to see two sides go hard at it. And I think, again, non-rugby fans would get it because it's just like, if you're a big eventer, you can look at that and you can see the level of the hits, you can see what it means to people. And the fact that it wasn't, at no point was that game done and dusted. It wasn't like, oh, it was a contest for 60 minutes and then South Africa rolled on the bomb squad and then ran away with it. It was never like that. You couldn't take your eyes off it because you just never knew quite what was going to happen. And it comes down to there being something on the line. And even though, realistically, both those sides will still go through out of the group, or you'd expect them to, it's the fact that it was like a statement of intent. You know, whoever wins that, you feel like there's just that bit of momentum behind them. So it was a cracker. I'll go hipster one for you. I'll chuck Georgia Portugal into the mix, which is one of those games that on paper you shouldn't even be watching, but the reality was just fantastic. You know, a real brilliant spectacle. And Georgia should have put the game to bed in the first half. They didn't. They let Portugal back in, who played this brilliant rugby, and they had a kick to win it at the end. It was great. It's a great fair. And again, 20 years ago, it was unthinkable that you'd even watch that game, yet alone enjoy it. So I don't know. Who knows? Maybe we're moving in the right direction. I certainly hope we are, because that was a really good fun game to watch.
Yeah, I think you've stolen that's a perfect. As it happened, I didn't watch the match. So if I'd have chosen it for the hipster factor, I would have been a complete liar because I didn't see it. But I did regret not seeing it because the highlight. Yeah.
Did you happen, just before we get to break, did you happen to see Samoa Argentina? I can't remember if that was this week or no, that was the previous week. Did you see Samoa Argentina?
No.
Which I was quite excited by. I thought, oh, this could be a good game for second place in that group. And it, honestly, it was the most 90s game of rugby I've ever seen.
In what way?
It was loads of scrummages that didn't go to ground, but were really ugly. There was loads of handling errors. It was wet. The ball was flying around like a bar of soap. The overall quality of rugby was just dross. And even the kits were 90s, which is a really good thing. You know, Argentina just sporting those blue and white hoops, and Samoa in like block colour blue with white trim. Everything about it screamed 90s. And I think one of those moments where you look back and go, yeah, do you know what? The 90s was not the, you know, amateur rugby was not this utopia that it's sometimes held up to be. But it was like a complete throwback of a game.
Constantly reminded of that on that ASPM Twitter thread.
Magnificent, isn't it?
But you see stuff and you just go, particularly the international games, that you see some absolute carnage. You know, if the highlights are a little bit longer than just a minute and a half, there's some really bad rugby going on.
Do you know what the background of that account is? Because obviously so much of it is basically French, and like there's lots of French coverage on there. But there's also heavily features Welsh teams, and you will,
it's like Ebbw Vale versus versus Neath or something, yeah. And you go, what? Hang on.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what it is, but it's well worth a follow. We've done lots of plugging other accounts this week.
Maybe they'll plug us back. I don't
know. Who knows? Oh well, who knows? Maybe. But yeah, nonetheless. Right, quick break, and then into a few more of our favourite moments of the World Cup, and also a preview of Wales Fiji. That's the plan coming up after this. Into the final part of the show of this week's Attacking Scrum Rugby World Cup special with MSG Tours. As you say, we are out there next week. Really looking forward to bringing you some extra content and to watching this Wales side of the flesh. Can't wait. And if you want to do the same, make sure you check out MSG Tours for your last minute packages. It is not too late. Right, Justin. A few of our favourite moments. We have so far butchered best find or best kind of unsung hero player. What about this one? Let's go for a more obvious one. What about most important player? Who do you think has kind of had the biggest impact on their team so far from what you've seen?
Well, I mean, this isn't a hipster choice at all, but obviously, I mean, the player that we're most invested in is DuPont, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
And whether he it's just, it beggars belief that he's ready and waiting to play again. How does that work?
I can't be, can he? He just can't be. I'm really, you know, again, to bring it back to kind of some of the football references. By the way, I've watched about 10 games of football in the last decade, but for some reason keep dragging it back to football. But you look back, you know, remember like when Gazza had his cheekbone fractured and again, you used to see players playing the mask. Guardiola would be the modern reference to that. That's football, right? How you could play scrum half in a quarter final with a metal plate in your face and a mask like that, it just feels...
Would he wear a mask? Has that been...
I don't know.
Certainly
wearing a mask is part of recovery and training. Whether or not he'd play it on the pitch, I don't know.
Would he be allowed to?
Yeah, I think Aaron Aldeke did it, again, about 10, 12 years ago. And so I think you are. I think you would be allowed to wear it. I can't see why not, if head-on-head contact isn't a thing, but... I mean, there must be something at the back of your head or the front of your face that would be playing on your mind.
Probably the front of your face is at the back of your head. If you know, it's not good, is it? It's weird. It's just extraordinary.
Shows how important he is, though, doesn't it? And I know we're stating the obvious because he's the best player in the world, but.
And the fact that they're talking it up. That's why I would have thought that if I was thinking about the messaging, I would be thinking about playing it down, not playing it up.
Yeah, you'd be doing the Eddie Jones treatment on it, wouldn't you? You'd be like, yeah, it's going to go down to the wire. We'll let you know. You know, we'll be naming the side as late as possible. Get more marmalade. You know, that'd be it.
Exactly. Yeah. That is the picture that you paint that'll never go away from my mind now whenever Eddie Jones's name. I don't know. Eddie Jones and marmalade is just now inextricably linked.
That's it. Just, yeah, like some demented, angry Paddington Bear. But, I you're right, though, in terms of importance. It's amazing to see a side with that much strength in depth. They lost some Tamak before the tournament, and obviously that was a blow. They lost Donty before the first game. That was a blow. And they've got depth everywhere, and they've got some wonderful halfbacks. It was some wonderful scrum halves, but no one is to Pont. He's just so important that it's really hard to look past that.
And just thinking about South Africa, there's not one player there. There was a point where it seemed that Faf was the most important player by a mile, and that's just not the case anymore. I can't think of an individual who, obviously, you know, we all talk Sexton, don't we? That's the other one in terms of how critical he is to the fully functioning team. But I wonder whether, I mean,
crucially, he's not injured. That's the difference. If Sexton was sweating on fitness now, it would be a different mood around the Irish team, I would have thought, versus where they are now.
Yeah. Well, are there any players that you think just that aren't that sort of top critic, you know, the not critical players, but just play?
I would say from our team, I think Jack Morgan is becoming one. I honestly do. I think as you will have known and regular listeners will know, I've been clinging on to the fact that I thought this year might be 2011 all over again. And 2011 was all about Warburton's coming of age on the biggest stage. And throughout that tournament, you looked at him and thought, Christ, we've unearthed the talent here. He just can't get injured. And we all know how that ended. And I kind of feel the same about Jack Morgan. You know, he is playing to such a level and having such an impact on the team that he's our de Pont, I think, and has the same kicking game.
Yeah. Maybe not quite as good, but yeah, no, it's not a hipster choice, but an alternative choice. I think if we lost, I think three players. If we lost Will Rowlands, I think we'd be a much weaker team.
Agreed.
I think if we lost, and I wouldn't say this from a from a more to do with who would replace him. If we lost George North, I think we'd be a much weaker team.
Toby again. When Toby is full,
yeah,
he is a hard man to cope with. So yeah, we've seen iterations of our side without Toby. You know, we missed him so much. I think in that semi final against South Africa 4 years ago, I think Toby could not necessarily the difference, but he would have made a massive impact. So I mean, there is plenty in our side still, actually, which is kind of encouraging. And actually, prior to the game against Australia, I would have said Bigger was in that same vein. You know, the fact that Bigger went off after eight minutes, I had my head in my hands and thought, oh, this is going to be a big ask for Anscombe. And, you know, he absolutely pulled it out of the bag. So it speaks volumes of the belief in there.
Have you thought again about selection and stuff and what you were saying? Because we were talking last week and we'd persuaded ourselves that going in fairly fully loaded was the best way.
I think so. A couple of changes. I mean, obviously Bigger's not going to be fit, so Anscombe will play there. I'd keep the centres the same. I'd bring Rio in for Lewis Rees-Zammit. I'd keep Liam at fullback. I'd keep Josh Adams on the other wing. Halfbacks would be the same as the obviously Bigger out and Anscombe in. I would keep Gareth Davis there for continuity. In the pack, I think I would keep... Would I keep everything the same? The only thing I'd be tempted to do is bring Lake in to start. And maybe... Yeah, I'd bring Lake in. I'd also be tempted... I don't know. Do you rest Morgan or do you not? I don't know. I mean, because Repl might want a bit of game time. But then Morgan's Morgan. So I don't know. What would you do?
Yeah, I'd be tempted to... to rest Jack Morgan as well, but I was quite intrigued. I've heard lots of people say that Lake should be on the bench, and I just wonder whether it's the reverse, that you would start with Lake. There is something about we need to test a front row that maybe that can compete, that isn't the first choice front row, I think.
I'm not sure. I kind of feel like this is it now. It's like I know it's not knockout rugby, but it's kind of like this is a kind of dress rehearsal game. Yeah. Go out and play quarter final level.
I'd like to see more of Nicky Smith. Why we're not sponsored by Nicky Smith is a mystery, because we mentioned him enough times.
We have been sponsored by Scott Otten for a number of years. He's a very good mate of his.
We're essentially
sponsored by Nicky Smith.
Yeah, so I don't know. That it does strike me as what I'd love is that Scotland, obviously, you know, having tonked Romania, have got a bunch of players now who can sit on the bench and be relishing the prospect of playing Ireland, but are in good spirits and good form. It would be nice if we could do the same, really. If we could just have that a bench that we're not going, with all due respect to, you know, say Dylan Lewis,
Yeah, I feel like Henry Thomas has kind of usurped him a little. I think off the back of that. And again, it's no disrespect to this, because they offer different things. I just feel like as the tournament goes on, and you know, we are going to have a quarterfinal to play after this game, set piece and scrummaging and lineouts and the rest of it is going to be so important that I feel being able to bring a scrummaging hooker like Thomas off the bench versus an around the park Dylan Lewis is probably the best approach. I tell you what I would say, you know, in all fairness to Corey Domaszewski, after that first game, I thought, do you know what? I could see Gatland freezing him out here, because he made very, very silly error that could have cost Wales dearly in that first game. And I kind of thought, you know, that whole being able to perform under pressure stuff might... he's bounced back and has been given other opportunities and has acquitted himself really well. And I do really like him. I think he's an excellent player, as much as I really like Nicky Smith. Yeah. So, you know, if he's made that 17 shirt his own, then crack on and run with it. So, I wouldn't be tinkering too much. The only thing is, like, I feel like there is so much more to come from Lake. There is so much more to come. And, those three hookers, obviously, as I've said before, yeah, Elliot was the very first guest that we ever had on the very first professional guest that we had on the pod. And however long ago that was, like 7 years ago, he had his boot in an ankle speaking to us while eating an ice cream on holiday in Cornwall. So I've always followed his career. And he's a really nice guy. And I'm delighted to see him bounce back from being out in the cold. Ryan Elias, I'll hold my hands up and say, when he was starting hooker under Pivac, I thought, I'm just not that sold. And he is, without doubt, the first choice at the moment. If the quarterfinal was tomorrow, you pick Ryan Elias, and fair play to him for doing that. But then Lake, it's just, honestly, I think there's such a beast in there. And this guy has so much more to give. And if it doesn't come in this World Cup, it doesn't come in this World Cup, but it's going to come. The only thing is his slightly iffy darts. And he's worked on that. It's improved. It was a real shame that it fell apart against Portugal, because I know it's not necessarily all his fault, but a couple of them look like nervy throws. But honestly, this guy, like, I think he's Lions standard, without a doubt. You know, whether or not he plays the Lions will depend on a number of different things. But the mindset, the physicality, everything about him, other than the slightly iffy darts, screams Lions test standard to me. And I really hope we get a chance to see a bit more of that. Maybe we should have seven forwards on the bench just to squeeze him in.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why I'd start him, because I just think it would be good to give him some darts time, I guess.
And as a skipper as well, you know, if you are considering giving Morgan a bit of a break, and I would like to see Reffel get some more time, because again, Reffel is becoming the kind of forgotten man in that seven jersey, and he is, you know, in the post 2007 era, if Tommy Reffel existed as a fully grown player, then he could be 100 capper by now. You know, it's that's how good he is. But he's going to have to compete with Morgan. And I think that back row looks so settled at the moment. But I'd be tempted to look at maybe giving Morgan a bit of bench time and starting Reffel and starting Lake.
Are you seeing 15, 20 points more victory? Or
it's a good point. No, I'm not actually. I'm feeling like it might be a bit I suppose it's not nervy, because you know that we're through, and that, you know, a bonus point gets us top of the group. So nervy is not perhaps the right word. The 2011 parallel would be the game against Fiji, which we all went into thinking we need to win, could be a bit cagey, 4 years previous, nightmare, all that stuff. I think we beat them 66-0. So I hope it's that, and I hope that we go. But I think Georgia have found something in the last game that they've struggled to find previously, and would like to back it up with a big performance against Wales. So I think they'll come out hard, but I'm not too worried. I would like to see a good performance for momentum. And I'm sure Gatland would as well. We don't really want another stutter like we had against Portugal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I feel the same way. I think that perhaps we won't. Our long-standing ability to not put the smaller, you know, lesser. Oh, God, why am I using those words? Because they're going to bite me on the arse.
Because we've lost to every nation in the world, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. How patronising is it, having bloody already lost at home to them?
I said less than a year ago, we lost at home to Georgia. So, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think it's going to be a cricket score either. I don't. But I don't mean that from a glass half empty kind of kind of viewpoint. I just think that, yeah.
Would be better? Would it be better to go out and put a big score on them, or would it be better to have a good test with a quarterfinal a week later?
I quite like that last ditch bonus point try by Faletau.
Oh God, I can't go through that again. That was almost as tense as the week before against Fiji, because at that moment in time, you didn't know that we were going to give Australia an absolute seeing to, and you thought this could be a three-way tie at the end of four games.
Yeah, I quite liked it. I didn't like it at the time. I couldn't, it was awful. But in retrospect, I think character building, perhaps. And I always like giving Gatland an excuse to put the boot in training the following week. I'm assuming that he does that. I have no idea, but I assume that it kind of gives incentive to all the coaching team to not that I'm suggesting that they'd sort of down tools and chill for the week by any means. But I think that I wouldn't mind some adversity at some point, having to drag back a 9-point deficit or to have to, not in terms of, you know, the actual result, but putting together a courageous victory in the face of you know, rear guard Georgian defence, or even better, Georgia coming at Wales hard. And
I think they will. I think there's no doubt about that.
And us having to do the job, you know, having to defend your own line quite a lot would be a good thing, I think, as long as obviously the key thing is that, you know, we don't suffer too many injuries.
That's been the game plan, hasn't it, really? Has been to take up the pressure.
Or disciplinary. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, that's always that's something when people say, oh, it's a foregone conclusion. I was just thinking, we're a red card away against us. I'm not suggesting that was ever going to happen, but, you know, the circumstances, you know, it's like, hello, we've done this before. Yeah. You know, we've been in an important game and we've lost a player.
Back when red cards weren't really a thing either. Whereas now it's always a danger. That's quite interesting just to look ahead, because we do know we've got a quarter final to play, which is an incredible position to be in. Now, it will either be, if we were to completely bungle it, it would be England. But failing, you know, not presuming, but let's say we top the group, it will then be Argentina or Japan. Now, that's an interesting one, because I've been thoroughly unimpressed with Japan so far. I've also been thoroughly unimpressed by Argentina.
Yeah, I watched Japan and I was surprised. You know, they obviously, on Thursday night, was it?
Yeah, I think it was. But Samoa have been even worse. Samoa have been hugely disappointing with the backdrop of having a lot of, you know, experienced, Luatua and Leo Lafano and players like that coming into the side to bring a bit of experience and stability. They've been very disappointing. But Japan got the result in that game. And again, it just made me think, it's not a done deal that it's going to be Wales-Argentina. Who knows? You know, you could be, again, a red card or an Argentinian dud performance away from Japan making a quarterfinal unexpectedly.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind playing Japan.
No, I'd be quite happy with that. If I'm honest, I think the way that this team has, the way the Welsh side has come together, it would be a disappointment now to go out to any of those sides, and I include England in that, in the quarterfinals.
Wow.
It would. I don't rate this England side. I don't rate the Argentinians. I don't rate the Japanese. I think it is, and I know people have said, the whole side of our pool is easy, and it is compared to the other. It completely is. But, you know, I think Fiji first up was a test. Australia is always Australia, and to put them to the sword like that is, you know, we've fully deserved our place in the quarterfinals. Yeah. And, maybe England are growing like that, but I haven't seen it yet. you know, I've seen them. What the most impressive performance I've seen from England was against Argentina. I thought that they, you know, they had adversity in the opening minute of that, but they seem to play their best rugby with 14 men on the pitch. Against Japan, like, again, everyone's putting the sheen on it that Marcus Smith came on. Marcus Smith won't feature from now on, I wouldn't have thought. I can't see Borthwick picking him, certainly not starting.
And
I just think, you know, he's the one that added the sparkle to that. They were dire for most of that game.
Usually when it goes awry that they stick him on out of desperation, which is no way to play, really. Because you're going, okay, last throw of the dice, and everybody knows it's coming.
And again, you know, now that Farrell's fit again, can you really have three 10s in a 23? Because I imagine it will be Ford and Farrell at 10 and 12. Can you have another one on the bench covering 15? I don't know. But I, again, this could all come back to bite me in the arse and they make the final and bloody win it. But I've yet to be convinced by that side.
I was talking to a mate who surprised me completely on last week, who said he thinks that they're back and that they're going to be a pain in the ass and they're going to do something. And I was like, really? You really believe that? I mean, he really doesn't want that to happen, but he was Welsh, but he was convinced that they were going to be the surprise package, as opposed to the romantic surprise packages that I was volunteering to him. But there we are.
Right, let's finish on this one, Yestin. As we usually do, a kind of moment of the week. Let's do a moment of the tournament this far. As listeners will know, this is sponsored by our good friends at So Coffee Trades. So let's have a moment of the tournament so far from you. This is your favourite, by the way. It doesn't have to be the best or the most impactful. It can be something as trivial as you like.
Well, it's going to be, again, two fairly obvious things. It's either Zombie or Josh Adams' tackle.
Two of my absolute favourite moments, yeah.
Yeah, those are the ones for me so far.
I tell you what, you go for Zombie and I'll go for Josh Adams, because we spoke about Zombie at length last week. And in fact, that's something that I felt like this weekend has really been like we just needed a few bigger games of rugby. Even if Ireland were like playing Romania this week, it would have been worth it just for the sing along at the end of the game. So I'm desperate to see that next week.
Yeah, that's surely going to happen, isn't it? It's going to be
repeated. What happens if Scotland win? What song do they sing?
Oh, it's the Proclaimers, isn't it? All day long.
Is it?
Isn't it?
I tell you what, there is a time and a place for the Proclaimers.
There is, yeah.
Which cup final would it have been? Presumably Hibernian. Yeah, it would be Hibs versus someone. And hearing like 30,000 Hibs fans sing Sunshine on Leith a cappella is absolutely incredible. And I know it's going to be 500 miles, but
yeah,
it's still like, I don't know, I've got a lot of love for the Proclaimers. So I'd be quite on board with that.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be the Fire Engines or some sort of late post-punk.
Which Orange Juice track will it be?
Oh, there would have been a point where Dignity by Deacon Blue would have been, you know, so we are dredging the...
I would have been up for that. No, we've got to finish on this, because this is a rugby connection, right? Cast your mind back to watching, you know, any generic, awful URC game featuring a Scottish side. Let's say it's Edinburgh versus the Ospreys on a Friday night.
Yeah,
Dougie Vipond, who presents for did you know this? So Dougie Vipond, who's the presenter on URC, was he the drummer in Deacon Blue or something?
Yeah,
was he the drummer or the bass player?
Hang on, talk among yourselves, as Murph likes to say. He was. Here we go. Yeah, he was. Yeah, I. Yeah, I. I mean, I'm not trying to show off here, but I used to hang around with them quite a lot when they first started. But I
you don't show off enough on this podcast. We don't tap into your musical.
Yeah, but that's not an idle boast, is it? But I did see them an alarming amount of times, and have kind of tried to push that one to the back of my memory banks and try to be a bit cooler than that. But particularly as Ricky Ross seems, yes, I don't know. Yeah. God, yeah, he was, God, what a, I had no idea that he was the same guy who was presenting the rugby, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Right, so I think this week's exit music will be, I'll pick a Deacon Blue track. And maybe we should alternate this as well, seeing as, let's be honest, last week turned into an off-air pile-on to Stereophonics, which has been our exit music for a long time.
Yeah, and I to be fair, I did speak to a member of the Manning Street Preachers this week, so I'm officially name-dropping, and he was cool with the fact that they played Dakota. He was going, nah, that's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it. It's
yeah, well, again, like I haven't got a lot of time sticking up for post-first album Stereophonics, but Dakota has truly garbage lyrics, but... You know, if you were to listen to it musically and you didn't know anything out, you go, that's a kind of identikit, but perfectly well-written, big stadium rock song.
I still call them Tragic Love Company anyway, rather than the Stereophonics, because that's what their name was before. And when they were practically an AC/DC tribute band. So, you know.
Excellent. Well, sorry. You've spent the whole episode saying this is not a hipster choice, but I think you've finished it on here are some hipster references.
Yeah.
The best of which is, I don't want to brag, but I knew Deacon Blue before Dougie Vipon presented on Premier
Sports. That's really not going to do me any favours in hipster circles, I can assure you, yeah.
Outstanding. Well, yes, I really enjoyed it. To say it was a rest week and we didn't have any footages of 13th century French basilicas or whatever is that a French? That's the Italian word, I don't know. Would it be the same?
I think some sort of monastery on the top of a hill, on top of another hill, perched on the edge of a cliff is actually the standard thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And stood there is Dougie Vipond with a Premier Sports branded microphone. So thank you. Yes, it's been fantastic to chat to you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you. I will do some shout out reviews over the next week. I know we've had a couple, which has been really good. We've actually had our biggest listening figures ever on consecutive months. So thank you so much for that. And stick with us. We've got loads more of this shit when we get down to the URC. You know, we will help get rid of the bitter pill that is the rugby around those seasons. So yeah, stick with us after that. But yeah, we will be back to chat rugby with you with loads and loads of content next week. So thanks for listening. On my holidays, they'll be doing the rounds. They'll ask me how I got a house. I'll save my money. See, isn't she pretty? That should call dinner tea. Sports Social Podcast Network.